All right. Well, here we are. This is awesome. I don't know how your numbers like, if you're like, hey, above 100 is a decent turnout, but I mean, I'm pretty pleased to be here with everybody.
That's a good turnout. Again, let's share the link. See if we can get this to 1,000, guys.
Yeah. Cool. So, Designing Dungeons, right? Our super cool name for our for our little conversation here.
Totally not influenced by Dark speaking the mountain.
I know. I was ripping off him there.
Ours is cooler. You did a good job with this one. Yeah. Okay. So, where to begin?
Well, is there anything that you kind of want to get started with, or should I just kind of start picking at your brain and trying to help not only me but everyone here listening in? What is happening in that mastermind that puts together these rooms?
Want to go for the current box then? If you just discuss that a little bit.
I'm totally cool with that. Yeah, I think so. Year of the Jellyfish is like on everyone's mind. So, any spiel? Anything to kind of set the stage?
Yeah, so I think we should probably start by reminding people that there are still only two routes, so that's basically a 50% chance of getting the OSCP voucher if you want to go in and get this thing. But this is a really fun one to develop, actually. Didn't take as long as some of the other ones, but it's turned out really nicely from the abuse I've been getting.
I know the first thing that I've seen just about everyone freak out about is, hey, when I start up the room, it's a public IP address.
Yeah, so there are a few reasons for that. I won't say all of them just now because there are kind of spoilers in there as well, but I will say that a very nice effect of it has been that it's really put the emphasis on kind of real life. It's no longer just you're in a lab environment, you can do what you like. You actually have to think about what you're doing, what you're running, and potentially even how you'd get a shell back from it. So,
yeah, you introduce a whole bundle of new like stumbling blocks when you have that public IP address, because you can't as easily just get kind of your reverse shell callback or whatever you might end up doing to get command access. You have to fight through NAT if you're behind the whatever firewall or router at your house. You have to get through the port forwarding. You have to get through whatever outbound firewall might even be necessary on like the target. So
yeah, it's really caught a fair amount. I didn't actually anticipate it catching quite so many people out, but I'm very pleased with how it's done.
I see some notions for ngrok. Yep, I would totally. Yep. ngrok would be a good choice. A VPS. Yeah, I just spin up a DigitalOcean machine. That's a great.
Yeah, that'd be my jump for it as well. To be honest, DigitalOcean, just go for it.
So, yeah. Can I ask how you go about putting a room like this or any of the virtual machines you end up deploying and putting out to try hack me? What does that process look like for you? Are you in a virtual machine, like just carving out and doing configurations by hand? Or are you like externally looking at a like virtual machine and using like Vagrant or Ansible or Chef or Puppet? How do you technically build that out, if I may ask?
So usually it is just a case of I've got VM where I start up whatever OS I'm wanting and just work from it from there, so do a couple of configuration things so I'm not being, let's say, tracked, but, you know, having my history record and stuff and then just work from it from there. I have a few ones. Upload vulnerabilities, for example, is a tutorial, and the first two of the pseudo vulnerabilities rooms, for anyone that's done them, were Docker as well. So I've kind of done things where it's a case of Docker compose and just do it that way and upload the machine with them on. It's usually is just a case of, for me, certainly just carving them out, just doing it all manually.
That's cool. When I had put together PKIL, and admittedly I don't have anywhere near the amount of experience that you do in putting these together, but I was like just cheesing putting it together with Vagrant so I could like externally decorate the box. I would use like just simple shell scripts and bash to try and configure it and get it set up. But at least then I could replicate it. Like if anything were to go wrong or the virtual machine were corrupted, I could, I don't know, rebuild it very, very easily. So I'm sure maybe Ansible or Chef or Puppet or some other things would have been good to do. But hey, whatever works.
So. Much more high tech than my method. I just take lots of snapshots.
Ooh, I mean, the snapshots, I'm sure, are a good move. So
Yeah, now the one thing I would say for anyone looking to get into it as well is, you especially if you're not doing it with Vagrant, especially if you're doing it by hand, it's you need notes. I mean, I will not share it because it's a full giveaway for any of my boxes, but I've got a list of steps that I could take to completely replicate a box in 10-15 minutes, and some of them I have full on when I can be bothered, quite frankly. All day, get out. some of them I full on do write a shell script. The original attack box, actually, when I built it, was it's got a full on shell script. It's come a long way since then, but it's got a bash script you can run on a Ubuntu 18.04 server, and it will do it that way, just again manually but automatically.
Is that typically your go-to kind of distro for doing these? You just roll in Ubuntu 18.04?
So unfortunately, we're limited on AWS as right. to how high we can go. I prefer 20.4. Most of mine traditionally have been 18.04, Ubuntu 18.04. I've kind of started moving into CentOS recently, mainly because it's more up-to-date and throws people off with SE Linux. and Windows, of course, I've started going into as well now. But Yeah, so AWS only supports CentOS 8.2 bincat. I think it might go to 8.3, actually. By the way, it's more up-to-date than Ubuntu 18.04 for sure. But, yeah.
I think I had used 18.04 for pkill, and when I was putting together one of the Advent of Cyber challenges for TryHackMe, I think I went like super old school with like Ubuntu 12.04, just so I could make sure that the dirty cow exploit would work. It might have been 14.04 or something, but I wanted to make sure Dirty Cow as the privesc would work in that one. So sometimes you just have to specifically choose it for what vulnerability or what exploit you want.
Yeah, totally. We've done, myself and Oday did one. I won't reveal anything specifically about that, but we did one similar, and honestly, that kind of box is so much fun because you're relying on the kernel being vulnerable.
Right.
It's just so much easier to do. Yeah, I mean, of course, you've done your own share of challenges and stuff for CTFs as well. How does that differ between something like pkill?
So typically when I'm putting on Capture the Flag events between NomCon or VersecCon back in the old day, or ActivityCon, and we've done so many now, between different B-sides and GrimCon and a good amount. But a lot of times those are just challenges that are encapsulated into Docker. So we haven't gotten ourselves into the need of using full-on virtual machines yet. Trust me, we want to. Like, it would be incredible to build out some VPN like access sort of thing and have boot to root machines, etc. We aren't quite there yet. So right now it's just been kind of Docker containers. But honestly, it's been super nice and easy with that. We use Kubernetes to make them kind of deploy out for each individual user. And the design process for me, honestly, is really iterative. Like, I'll start with a flat classic container, and then I'll try and make sure, hey, okay, does this step getting some file configuration in there work? And then I'll try and tweak it and make sure, okay, if I make this change, if I were to try and take advantage of this, does that work? Like, I think there's an example of making a shared tmux session for privesc. Okay, we'll try and create the socket in there. Perfect. Make the file. Try and make sure it has like accessible permissions for even users that aren't supposed to be allowed to get into it. And that's where the privesc is. And then actually, can you latch onto it? Because you need a PTY and everything set up. So it's just one stumbling block after the other and trying to carve out what would work. But it's certainly much of a smaller case in the CTF realm than I think it would be for a virtual machine like this in the TryHackMe realm.
Yeah, I've seen it kind of both ways. Like we've had people ask, and I mean, I would quite like to see it as well, to be honest, for smaller challenges to have that kind of Docker infrastructure, because it's so much easier, so much quicker to just upload a Docker file and have it deploy. But equally, then there are people, I've spoken to people, especially some of our new content devs, the professionals, who this is the first time that they've been able to upload a virtual machine and have the whole thing available to them. So yeah, it's apparently very nice coming from that perspective.
I see Papa Shell in the chat kind of screaming at me like, "Hey John, you should drop a little teaser about this new one that we're brewing, that we're thinking about." So honestly, the giveaways are a lot of fun. We really enjoy these, and because it really gets the community together. Papa Shell and all of his different aliases. I think I've seen him as Fawaz, right?
Fawaz
is exceptional at putting together these giveaways, and he always rocks out a great kind of prize and reward. So next month we're doing something that should be really, really fun. I think carved out the idea for this one, and then we're chatting around with some other mentors or some other developers and seeing what can we put together here. So we might get a little bit of Docker, we might get a little bit of web stuff, but I think it's gonna be awesome. So keep an eye out for that. Okay.
What I would say is I've heard a little bit about this and it sounds great. And the guy and the other developer involved is very, very good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's why I think we had him in mind, because I came up with this horrendous, disgusting idea and everyone was like, "That's evil." And I love it.
looking forward to this one. Good grief. We're 151 people as well. My goodness.
I think that thread brings us into a decent new question or conversation, kind of more about the conceptual mental process of putting these together when we're developing training and creating education. Do you come up with the idea or the vulnerabilities in the tech that you want to showcase before you put together the box? Or is it kind of just, hey, let's just jump into a machine and see what comes to mind? How do you plan, I guess?
So I'm very mixed with it, to be honest. Quite often, if I'm building a box, it's either a case of I've looked at either ExploitDB or the news or whatever, seen something I quite like the look of, and figured, you know what, let's put this into a box, then let's put either, whether it's a Privesque or a Foothold, let's put something else in there as well, and start theming it and so on and so forth, and build up around that one thing. Or I come up with a concept, like in Year of the Jellyfish, where I had something I wanted to do, didn't know quite how I wanted to do it, but implemented it based on something that just kind of fit and just made it fit.
That's awesome. Some folks in the chat begging for hints. Are we a little too early?
We might give some hints. I'm gonna say stick around a little bit. We don't want you leaving after 15 minutes.
Right, right.
We can have some hints in a wee bit.
We gotta hold you here.
Yes. Yeah.
So while you were building out Year of the Jellyfish or even others, I want to table and ask you about networks and stuff super soon, because I know that's a whole other can of worms. But when you're building out a specific room or this specific machine, when you have that intended path that you were just talking about, is there anything that you do to spot check those unintended paths? Or do you care?
Well, I care. I'm a perfectionist, I will admit. Yeah. especially with this new overlay FS exploit, that one's a heck of a hard one to patch. But I'm hoping AWS upgrades their kernel and the kernel they've got stocked. But yeah, honestly, that one to me just comes down to experience. It comes down to knowing the OS you're using, the software that's installed by default, the configurations that are installed by default. So a good example of that is Ubuntu, where the default user is automatically, if you get access to them, even if you remove them from the sudo group, the LXD and ADM groups can automatically be used as an unintended privesque. It's just kind of knowing what's vulnerable about the tools you're using, and going from there, and plus getting Oday to run through it for an hour and a half.
It's funny. So I don't know if I'm as much of a perfectionist, because when I do these in the capture the flag sense, when I put out a CTF challenge, if someone solves it in a new, clever, or weird or interesting way, then I'm like, oh, cool. Like, hey, a flag's a flag. You did it, man. When I put together PKill, and when I put together, again, the more linear, streamlined, process-oriented training and content like that, when that came up with unintendeds, and it was like 3 one after the other because I thought I would fix it and then there would be some other stupid mistake that I made and then it would come up again. And I remember Skitty and I were like back and forth like, hey, I'm sorry, can we just patch the box real quick?
Hi, been there, like, been there.
I'll get tunnel vision and I'll be like, oh, they're the players, the audience, they're absolutely going to take the path that I have in my head and they won't try any tricks because why would they? They know it's a real quick and easy thing. But then folks always get clever with like, oh, hey, we have sudo in the directory that we own. We can stomp the directory or stuff like that. Yeah. So.
Yeah, no, I've definitely been there with getting Skiddy to clone things every 5 minutes. I remember one, the Emily actually, I think you're still here, was the last big competition box I did, where they managed to root it. They managed to get access and root it.
Nice.
With unintended. And to an extent, I like that. I mean, there was one last night with one of the people who got a shell on... Year of the Jellyfish, yeah, 3 unintended, go away. Whereas one person with Year of the Jellyfish, in fact, I think it was you again, who'd done it. How do I do this without hinting? Who'd got access the intended way, but in a slightly different method. Now that I love to see. Because that's just, it's a different way of doing things, and it's a different way of, it's not that I've failed in making the machine invulnerable otherwise, it's that the way I've intended for it to be vulnerable is vulnerable slightly different to how I did it personally, which is really good.
Cool.
I saw something in the chat a second ago. Now let me see if I can find it. There's one. Here we go. So there's, do you manually make different vulnerabilities and do you need to patch some vulnerabilities that you do want, that don't want to showcase? That's Reaver? I can't pronounce your name, I'm sorry. I think that's an interesting one to discuss, actually, in terms of it brings up, so we've just been talking about patching unintendeds, but manually making the different vulnerabilities, that's an interesting one in terms of, I know I'm very mixed in terms of it myself, but would you look at a particular, so maybe one of the OWASP top 10, for example, pick something there and code an application around it? Or would you pick something that already exists and has a publicly available thing? I know I'm mixed, but how would you go about it?
it honestly, it totally depends on kind of what I want to showcase and what skill I want the players to flex. Like, You can choose an OWASP top 10 thing, and then you just have a kind of cookie cutter classic vanilla. Some folks may have seen this all the time. Vulnerability, and there's nothing wrong with that. Sometimes that's good, but if you stretch it a little bit more by putting in a filter or maybe tweaking it and spinning it in some way where you have to do some other tricks or jump over some other hurdles, blacklist and evasion and stuff like that is one way to do it, or adding in the other limits of like, oh, you can't see output. Maybe you have to do some kind of back and forth threshold detection with blind testing. That spins it in one direction. And I do like to do that rather than just taking, oh, hey, it's a flat local file inclusion or it's vanilla SQL injection or something like that. When it becomes a more real world, I guess, quote unquote, when it's a public CVE thing, when if it's a exploit that's already known out to the world, I'd like to use that, but I again would like to maybe change or do some configuration so that's not just, hey, copy and paste the script and then you win. I do want the players to look at the code and then see what's different about the environment that they're actually targeting so that they might be able to make changes and tweak it and understand all that's happening, not just grab the gun and start firing, you know?
Yep. Yeah, definitely. I think here's your first hint, guys. Take notes. I think the people who have rooted Year of the Jellyfish already may agree with this statement. I definitely agree with that in terms of it may be more realistic, but it gets kind of boring if you just from being on the other side from exploiting it. If you're just seeing you know, I see a vulnerable service. Oh, there's a CVE for this. Oh, it worked.
Right. Right.
Yeah. It's always good to kind of either. I mean, this is what I like. I'm quite in terms of long custom development. If I've got a web application that I want vulnerable, I will quite often just design it myself and try and adhere to kind of professional principles. But as far as possible anyway. But and then just break it slightly. But yeah, I mean, just otherwise changing things, it works. it's such a nice way of doing it.
I want to I want to pick your brain, not strictly on You're the Jellyfish, but some of the other, if I may, can I kind of get your thoughts on, is it different when you're designing a full-on network, right, between Wreath or some of the others you've built out?
there's a question. So Wreath, especially, Wreath's the one that I've been working on. I've seen an overview of Krillic and Spooky working on the other two so far, but Wreath's my one just now. In terms of building it, it's more of a sandbox rather than strictly speaking, you know, it's designed for people to have a play around in. They get to try out some of the tutorial stuff, and by the end of it, of course, they end up with the root hash, well, the admin hash. So they do. They've got that sense of accomplishment, and it is a path through it. But it's kind of the idea behind it was to rather than to design a network that I wanted to have specific, well, it does have specific vulnerabilities, but rather than having a challenge in it, it was kind of a case of I want to build a network with a lot of teaching content in it, and where it's fairly easy to exploit, and you're just kind of following through. And honestly, I think I've got that. I think we've ended up there. I'm not sure if you've done it yourself, but I think we've got that.
It seemed like that was the real, I think, community response to Wreath was like, hey, this is kind of a nice, fun learning environment to test things and experiment and understand how that all the different ways of pivoting or moving around a network. And that, I think, is really well done. So props to you for that one.
Thank you. I'll take that.
And Hollow Right is coming up.
Oh God, don't start Hollow. Don't start on Hollow. I won't step on Krillic or Spooky's toes by doing any kind of tutorial or not tutorial. I'm reading stuff from the chat at the same time. By doing any kind of spoilers for Hollow, but it's it's got some interesting stuff in it, definitely.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what happens when it comes out.
Here's the thought. So one thing, and I'll pour a little bit of kind of my back in here. The NomCon CTF that I put on, one of the things that we wanted to do was add the mission, which was meant to be a little bit more of a storyline progressive thing to solve multiple challenges and uncover more and more pieces. And it was like one challenge would unlock the next. So simulate sort of one step after the other in the mission, the Constellations NomCon challenges. So when I was building that out, I would run into issues where, in my case, it was specifically OSINT. It was specifically trying to track down fake SocketPup social media accounts, and they would just die. Like Twitter or Facebook or LinkedIn would just nerf and kill the account. So I'm like, crap, all these different routes and all these different kind of planned outlets to go through this and to exploit this, it started to thin, and I had to like shift gears from what I originally wanted to build, and now I have to do something different. Do you ever find yourself in that situation, and what do you do? Like I planned out on Lucid charts. I would like graph this thing out in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, that's so when I did a workshop on this actually last year, just when I was getting into it, just for uni friends. And one of the things I was saying at that point was you build out a plan of attack, that what you want people to be doing. And even then, I think the first one I ever built, the first stream I built, and it was almost exactly the same as what you're saying, actually. It was OSINT stuff. Mm. And it was just ending up with things getting deleted left, right, and center. It's nuts how good they are at it. But yeah, it's kind of a... I mean, even for this one, even for Year of the Jellyfish, there was... The initial access is slightly different to how I was originally intending it to be. Same kind of thing, but it's different software, slightly different idea. And that's just because things break, you know, things aren't working, and it's kind of, I mean, I run into that certainly. And it's a case of either can you make this work, or is it wise to just take a step back and not necessarily start again, but go back to a previous snapshot in the VM and just see where you're at. That, for the record, guys, is another hint. take a step back. Take a step back. Don't get too engrossed in things.
I think that works so well almost all the time. Just like, hey, pull your head out of the sand, take a look at the bigger picture, see where everything is doing what.
That's, yeah, definitely. And just for anyone thinking about going for OSCP as well, that is absolutely key in the exam. Don't OFSEC are worse than me for putting rabbit holes into things. Yes. don't get too engrossed in one thing, and that's what this box is trying to teach you as well. It's a case of there are plenty of things to get to drag you in. Yeah, exactly, Magna. One massive needle in a haystack. There are plenty of things to drag you in. Don't get dragged in.
My pro gamer tip, or whatever, if I could offer for that on that notion of OSCP, and even this, even you're the jellyfish or whatever you're hacking on. Step, like, literally get up, literally go walk around, like pace around your house, and take a break, even if it's an hour, like maybe every hour. Okay, you're working hard, and then just like, let me take 5 minutes to go like clear my head and not think about this, not be on keyboard, just so you can like reorient your mind. For OSCP, and I don't mean to make this a conversation about OSCP, but I would literally take a break every hour because I need to do it for my sanity.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree with that. And don't get burnt out, guys. It's not worth just... When I did that with the first OSCP exam attempt I did, I'm seeing it for this as well. I'm seeing it for everything you do. There's no point in setting yourself a goal and then forcing yourself to stick with it. There's no point in saying, okay, I'll go to sleep, or I'll take a break after I get foothold here, because the longer you go, the more tired you're going to get, the less well you're going to function, and the less likely you are to get in. Just take a break, guys. Don't go too hard on it. Yeah, don't burn out because I'm... Yeah, legendary. Don't burn out because I'm a sadist. There's your TLDR.
On the note of burnout, even as a player, but now more so as a creator and as a developer, how long does it take you to build out rooms or training like this? What amount of effort and commitment and investment does it really take to put someone like You're the Jellyfish together, or put something like Wreath together, or anything else you want to dive into?
So I have an exact number for Wreath, actually.
Ooh.
But yeah, so the answer to that for me certainly would be it varies. It very varies. So Year of the Jellyfish didn't actually take me long. This isn't a hint, it might be a teaser, but I built Year of the Jellyfish as a procrastination from a harder box I'm working on. So yeah, that was kind of an afternoon in the
next
morning.
That's hilarious and awesome.
So I've got a harder one coming out. Yes, I did just say harder. So that one didn't take me particularly long, but something like Wreath. Now, the exact time that I submitted for Wreath was, and this is not including testing, but the exact time I submitted for Wreath just for development, for planning and development, was 154 hours to build out the Wreath network.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah, so it varies, definitely varies.
That's funny for me. So, because like... I built tiny trinket things, right, between P-Kill and the advent of Cyber. But because I like literally recorded myself building that, so I'd have the video and to showcase that footage of carving that and putting it together, I think that's 4 hours, maybe. but that's nowhere near what I'm sure what it would be for something so large scale like Wreath or Hollow or any of the network sort of things. But
yeah, especially with them, Wreath's only 3 machines. Especially once you start adding in the bigger machines, and especially once you start adding in a lot of automation, things start breaking a lot more. So you've got a lot more work after it releases, and B, there's obviously more to dev But yeah, it's networks certainly are a big undertaking.
Cool. I know I've been throwing a lot at you. Are there any questions that you would kind of like to pick out, or any thoughts that you have at the moment?
Yeah, actually. So I'll just go back to what you were saying before. You did a couple of, was it one or two boxes for Advent of Cyber plus Peak Hill. Are you planning on building us some more? And B, what was your you're saying Vagrant, but what was your kind of thought process, and how did you decide to get in with Peak Hill originally?
Oh, cool. Thanks. I do occasionally have moments of inspiration where I think of something like, ooh, that would actually be really good as a Try Hack Me room, as opposed to a Capture the Flag challenge. Because we've done so many CTFs and stuff now, it's sort of in a weird state of demand. Like, hey, we're looking to put on new games with a different company or for a different conference or for a different event. So it's like we have to keep and retain our creative ability. Like, we can't expend it on anything else. But for some things that I think are fun, or for just new tricks that it might be slick, I like, oh, maybe I can bundle that up into a Try Hack Me room. I also like to, I don't know, make them fun and make them a meme. I think I literally had the idea, I want a string CTF or a strings box where every challenge that you solve is just using a different argument and new tricks and weird Unicode encodings of strings or crap like that. I Googled and I did my homework on all of the things you could do with strings. It's the overpowered tool. Dark is memeing at me, yeah.
That's a question I frequently get asked, Dark.
And again, that would just be like kind of a meme. That just kind of be for fun. But I would like to plan to do more. It's just kind of a matter of time. And I'm, needless to say, pulled in a lot of different directions a lot of the time. So it's just tough sometimes.
Of course.
Sorry, no.
I was just going to say to Hazem. I can't say names, I'm afraid. All the questions are getting put into a Notion document, and I think we'll probably get a couple of them soon if Esky's ready. But yeah, we'll just finish this line of thought first.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm ready when you guys are. So as soon as you're off, I'll just start churning through them.
Yeah. So yeah, so it'd be good, great to see more. Peak Hill was good.
Yeah, Peak Hill was. I like that. I was pleased with that one because at the time I didn't think, and maybe I was wrong, I didn't think Try Hack Me had coverage on like the Python pickle, or I didn't think it showcased some Python bytecode. And like, yeah, there's the troll because I like Python and I consider myself, and a lot of people do, a Python guy, but. I don't know. I hope that it was still kind of fun and showcase some different things. It wasn't extremely hard. It wasn't insane. But I hope it also wasn't like a baby thing. So
yeah, it was a really good box, that one. And as you said, I don't think we've got much on them on the pickle library. I know I had it's kind of been relegated. I might bring the Privesk in to another box in the future. Hint, hint. Not on this one. I had a Privesk planned out using it at one point, pickle in a race condition, which was quite fun.
Magna just put in the chat, year of the pickle.
Oh, Christ, no. We're not having year of the pickle. But no, that was from, interestingly, one of my first boxes I was thinking about doing, that it just kind of, I got given another challenge to do. Another walkthrough to build, and it just kind of slipped to the back of my mind. And then when I got back around to it, I took a look at it and thought, oh my goodness, I can do so much better than this now. few months down the line. So I've just kind of quietly dropped that one, but I might bring some of the elements into new ones.
That's really cool. Like, you're cognizant and aware of like your own growth and progression in designing some of these.
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing this for a little over a year now. I'm just almost finishing up my second year at uni.
Do you think, or can I ask, how is like the rate of progression? Like, if do you feel like you get better after one box that you made, or do you feel like you get better and improve your skills after two or three boxes, or where's the ramp in you feeling like you've improved your design and development process, if there is one? Is that, I know that's a weird question. What do you think?
So certainly for the first few, I look back on now and think they're all kind of a flat, awful, I'll admit. But yeah, no, I like to think at this point that each one I do gets slightly better. I'm kind of accepting that Year of the Owl is a bit of a dip as my first Windows one. But yeah, if we're just going with Year of the Dog to Year of the Jellyfish, I'm quite happy. I think there's kind of been a linear progression there, constant progression. So yeah, I mean, I feel like I get better each one I do, and I'm happy with that. So,
cool. That's super cool.
Well, this seems like a good opportunity to start churning through these questions.
Yeah, I think.
So a lot of them have already been answered, and if they have, just give a one kind of word answer. But guys in the chat, we are still taking questions. Let's not take it easy on the guys. Okay, so we've got questions for questions for Muri. There isn't any specific questions for John. So
I saw one a second ago. You ask a question, I'll go find it.
Okay, well, I'll start for either. So either one of you pick it up. So the first one is from, Eski. Wow. Do you typically come up with an exploit foothold PrivX method or challenge first, then choose a theme? Or do you choose a theme first and work the box around that?
Ooh.
John, do you want to go on that one? I've just found the question for you. I'm just
for sure. For PKill, I had planned the tech and like the progression of you do this and then this and then this before the theme. I knew like, hey, I wanted to go through maybe 3 to 4 stages of doing something. And that would be the exploit, that would be the foothold, that would be the PrivX. I started that first because that really feels like the meat and like the substance of the room. But then the stylized decoration and theme, truthfully, that comes secondary for me. Maybe that's a different development process for others. And I'll try and make the name obviously be a spin-off of what the tech or what the solution is. Folks might have seen that all the time in CTF challenges that I build out between tmix being a reference to tmux, or movie sequel being a reference to sequel something. I'll just try and, I don't know, add a subtle nod or a subtle hint towards what you should be doing in this. And PKill, that's kind of a gimmick, and pickle. But
that's fair. I mean, I could see ones like Pickle Rick where, for instance, somebody could come up with the idea and say, right, I want the challenge to be someone wants to find this, this, and this. How do I then do that? I mean, I guess that would have perhaps come from the other direction.
Did you have a different thought on that for you, Mary? Or
so, yeah, I mean, for me, it would usually be, coming up with something I like, something technical that I like, or a technique that I want to showcase, and then thinking, you know what, this fits in quite nicely with the theme. And again, here's a hint. I would usually theme the box around, name the box even around some way of something to do with how you would attack it. But otherwise, yeah, I've had a few that have been kind of thinking this would make a nice theme for a box. How would I fit things into this coming at it from the other way? So yeah, it's kind of a usually starting with technique and then going into theme and occasionally the other way around.
Well, there's your hint, guys. Use the jellyfish technique to get root. Okay, the next question is from Tim Taylor. What is your methodology when designing an intended path, and what are your go-to tools/methods to verify that there are no unintendeds?
I think we chatted about that one a little bit. Did we already, Mary?
Yeah, I think we did. So, tools and methods, I don't think we did, but I would say it's just kind of a, why use tools and methods when you've got an O'Day?
I mean, I'm sure O'Day would love to be referred to as a tool.
I call them that frequently anyway.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, moving on. So from Legendary, it's hard to introduce bugs in code. What do you feel when you purposefully introduce bugs? do you cry a little inside? Which translates to, how would you introduce clues in boxes without degrading the coding quality?
I would say coming in on that one, I don't know if Legendary's still listening, but I would say coming in on that one, a lot of the code that I've done for boxes, I've actually been really proud of, because it's been pushing my knowledge of it into new areas, which I've then gone and applied on in uni, in personal projects and stuff. So I would say that a lot of my improvements as a developer, just as a programming developer, have been through CTF boxes, kind of ironically. So personally, I would see it as you're making a good web, or not even necessarily a web app, you're making a good application, and then you're choosing. It's not a case of degrading the code quality, it's a case of you're choosing to just snap it in just the right place. So I'm personally, I don't cry inside. I'm quite proud of myself, honestly.
Fair play. Okay, from CMNatic, the legend that is, a question from a fellow content developer. Have you found yourself changing your workflow from a previous method when planning out a room? If so, what different approaches have you taken? For example, I've started mind mapping rooms that I developed to have a visual flow of what I want the user to experience.
John, you got
any thoughts about your workflow?
I can jump in on that if you want.
Yeah, this one I think I would tie in a little bit of kind of what I was scheming for the NomCon Constellations challenge. I would literally use Lucidchart to like graph out what would lead to what and what each thing kind of required. And that was the visual flow of what I wanted the user to experience and how they could get there one after the other. I tend to use Lucidchart for that. I don't know if anyone else has a kind of tool of their choice, or just drawing it out on paper. But yes, if I know that it's a long thing, if it's a large scale, maybe multi-step thing, I will certainly draw it out. And if I need to change my workflow, that's the benefit of having that, is that, okay, we could just kind of update it and keep cruising. So,
yeah, I don't think I've ever done anything visually with it, to be honest. Interestingly, and I've got these slides on my site, actually, but the talk that I did last year that I've referred to already, I would recommend in that explicitly writing out how you want it to be attacked, then a full-on plan of how you would make it, just in text, just in bullet points. Now, interestingly, just going into the have you found yourself changing your workflow part of that, I wouldn't really do how you want them to attack it now. I'd be much more abstract. And honestly, I put that down to experience, more experience working with it, in terms of I would still write out what I want to happen, just so it doesn't leave my head. Or so it does leave my head and I don't forget about it. But I would write it out as kind of a paragraph of what I want to happen, rather than a kind of a step-by-step approach of how I expect it to happen. So yeah, I mean, my methodology's definitely evolved there. But...
Okay, so I'm going to go off-piste of the questions, because a really, really pertinent one came in, and this is very important for everybody in the InfoSec community. John, do you use Vim? And if so, how do you exit without getting
Christ. Oh, Christ.
So I don't use Vim just to trigger all the people on the internet.
Oh, dear.
That's why I use everyone's like, why aren't you in dark mode, John?
just to
make you cringe.
Okay, right. Back into the list. Okay, from me, can you describe the first room you created and what you do differently now that you have more experience? Muri, you pick it up. Go for it.
So my first room I did for the Securitate conference that my university do. It was the first thing I did, and it's on TryHackMe, Jack of All Trades Legendary was my first one. And yeah, I mean, I'm it and You're the Rabbit, I am, frankly, I cringe at these days. I'm not happy at all with them. But what I would say from that is it's something that I see it as an improvement. I see it I've got better, which is why I no longer like the kind of less realistic, more CTF-y puzzle stuff that I used to do. I think everyone starts there, though. I mean, it's always, everyone's got that capability of, you start with what you know, which, you know, well, everyone will start at a different place, a different level of experience when they're building stuff. But you start with what you know, and then you just get better and better. Everyone will do that.
John, how about you?
Yeah, I think I'm similar in that they were very, very small, tiny trinkets. And I'll bring that more to the CTF challenge realm rather than the Try Hack Me room for me. So when I had my cyber team in school, right, when I was trying to, I was like the team captain of that. And I wanted to train and teach and make sure that the other folks were kind of getting smart on stuff. So I would try to expose them to the simple same things that I had learned, even if it's like, oh, it's a book cipher, or look, this is how you can identify stupid, cheesy Base64, or even the different variants. And they're absolutely trivial, tiny tasks, but those are the ones that are just building blocks. So the first challenge that might have had a little bit more beef to it, right? There was actual thing there. I don't think I could even remember or track down what I would consider to be my first. What I would do differently, no matter what it was, is I would try and stretch it and try and spin it into different things that aren't so flat and cookie cutter. Because we're memeing in the chat, hey, Rot13, Base64, next level stuff. Like, yes, we all know. We all can do those things, and we've seen them all the time, all too often. So I'd like to do something that's a little bit more clever, like, oh, those two-factor authentication bypasses, or, ooh, doing deserialization with, like, I don't know, maybe YAML, the yet another markup language, or doing something weird with prototype pollution, or strange stuff out of, no, I don't know, just different things. I want to stretch it to stuff that isn't so already seen and
isn't around.
Yeah.
Worth mentioning as well that you've got, what is it, Katana? You're one that just kind of picks up on things like this, yeah.
Fair enough. Okay, so I'm going to be jamming a few questions together here because some of them are quite similar. So the next kind of questions are about room and CTF difficulty. So is there a specific methodology as to how the difficulty is defined? Is it to do with the enumeration process? What the person should know? And how do you decide what difficulty it is? Do you decide before you go in, or do you decide as the room evolves when you're creating it?
I'll start this one off, if that's totally cool.
Yeah, go for it.
Because the CTF realm is very interesting and difficult to capture the challenge as part of a challenge. Oh, sorry, the difficulty, how hard the thing is. So because you could decide, oh, this task is going to be a static amount of points, but if you, as the challenge author, decide that, and you have your own bias, like, hey, you know how to solve it because you built the thing, you might be totally wrong in how really challenging or how tough that task is. So the players, the audience can get angry, like, hey, how come this 50-point challenge is so much harder than this 500-point challenge that was super easy? And like, you as the developer, you as a creator, shame yourself for just being wrong. Now we can use, and we started to, and what we do, use dynamic scoring, where the more people that solve it get it, then the point goes down, and they can determine, okay, more people have solved this, so it might be a little bit easier. But then at the very, very beginning, at the start of the game, no one knows what is easy for them to do or more approachable or what's insanely hard. So then we've tried to add tags. Then we tried to add a little description. Hey, this is more beginner friendly, or more, this is insane and brain melting. It's really hard to solve that idea of deciding how difficult something should be, because our understanding of it is going to be totally different for a different player. I don't think I've sort of cracked that or determined what's the best way to say it. But when you say medium, it's a good catch-all.
Yep.
Even if it's not,
I'm in trouble for this one right now.
Jellyfish.
Yeah. From a Try Hack Me perspective, certainly it's I would argue it's medium from techniques, but hey. So from a Try Hack Me perspective, it's and if the room reviewer takes a little bit of input in it, and the author obviously chooses. So, I mean, I've ranked Year of the Jellyfish as medium because of the techniques being used. Yeah, it's just a mean medium. But I've ranked it as medium because of the techniques in use rather than all the rabbit holes.
That's an interesting way of thinking about it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I will say the last few times I've released a medium, the admins have overruled me quite quickly. So,
Fair enough. Okay, yeah. So this is from Alex, directly towards Murray. And I'm going to read it as he said it. Let's say I want to do some research on a Privesque technique. What's one you've recently used?
I would say my favorite Privesque technique recently is the overlay FS technique.
Okay, enough said about that one. Okay, there's been a few questions that are, again, directly towards Murray, which are, I'm sorry about this, because I'm going to ask a question you told me not to ask, which is, how do you even start making a network like Wreath?
So it's actually a bit more regulated than you'd think in terms of, so I was approached by Skiddy and Ashu to ask if they wanted me to, or they said they wanted me to do it, and would I be willing to do it? So I said yes at that point, and I went away and put together what I wanted to see in terms of boxes, what I wanted to try and build. I had a spec of what I was supposed to be working on. They decided that it was meant to be, what's the exact spec? Pivoting, antivirus evasion, and Empire. That's why those three topics are put at the forefront. And I went away and put together a spec of what I wanted to build for it and how I wanted to teach these. That got approved, and I put together the boxes. Boxes got uploaded, put together in a network. I was the only person in the network for about a month and a half. I did the actual tasks, and then once the tasks were done, it went straight into testing. Changed a bunch of stuff, upgraded a bunch of stuff. I've got a few more upgrades I need to make because people keep breaking stuff. but yeah, it's kind of, yeah, you start small, put together a spec, and then just work from there.
Sounds easy. I'm joking. I'm messing. Okay, John, for John, because it's more of a CTF one, how do you guarantee mixing sufficient amount of realism with CTF style methods when you're doing rooms and CTFs?
Yeah, that's something that I've tried to dabble with and dance with in a lot of the recent Capture the Flag challenges, because I still like having those warm-ups or those beginner baby basics, base 64 raw 13 crap, just so people get momentum, just so people feel like they've got some, wind under their wings and they're moving, so they have the drive and the encouragement to keep solving new challenges and slowly push themselves into harder challenges that are more complex. So I still want to make sure that I have challenges that are using those more realistic techniques or are very pen test like or red team like. I can't simulate to the extent that Try Hack Me can, being inside of a full virtual machine, but doing some simple stuff, whether it's, hey, notice this trick in the Linux command line, you can use the history command for local file inclusion. Or if you were to use the set UID binary with GIMP and you can use some like weird SSH forwarding, maybe you could get in and get some passwords out. I like to do somewhat that's still Linux and more pen testy, red team oriented, that's not strictly, hey, here's a Steg challenge that has a crypto RSA key embedded in it, whatever. I don't know. I try to balance it, and hopefully I do a decent job, but I guess that's really up to the audience.
I suppose that makes a lot of sense. Okay, we're starting to boil down a little bit, so I'll do a few more of the more technical questions, and then we'll get into a couple of the more fun questions. So when you're choosing to add scripts to boxes, how do you decide which language to use? Is it just one that you know, or do you try to add languages that might be unknown or rare?
Do you mean like for building the box, or just leaving code and the things that are the box uses for its functionality?
The ones that the box uses, especially if the user has to, for instance, decode a little bit of code. So like,
yeah.
a Python script or something that you have to fix, for example.
Yeah, I certainly prefer to show them something that is a little more obscure or they haven't seen before.
Yes, like Miri's box, which has mind F in it.
Ooh, Privest using Nim. Papa Show, Fawaz has thrown in a great idea. Next box, next giveaway.
That's what was in this one. There's a hint for you.
Ooh.
Okay,
that's pretty cool. Let's move in quickly on. So have you guys got any tips for creating your first kind of room or challenge? Let me pick randomly, John.
Ooh. Look, it takes a lot of exposure. It takes a lot of just playing other Try Hack Me rooms or playing other CTFs or playing anything, Hack the Box, any war games, Over the Wire, Pico. Kind of find something that you like. Find stuff that you think is cool and interesting and fun. And I'll be honest, if you feel like you don't exactly know your direction yet, try and recreate one thing that you've seen previously that you think is cool and still want to showcase it. Because if you can recreate it, then you might be able to get a little bit more in the weeds of like, oh, what if I spin this dial this way? Or what if I push this button, turn this knob? Can I change the challenge in any different way? And if you do that for just one thing, and then you do that for a couple others, then you can start to build out a multi-step storyline that might work well as like a room, as like a full-blown task where you can progressively go through, here's a set of exercises, here's a set of trainings and things to do, and you just stack them together. You accumulate them, but work in those bite-sized chunks is my tip, I guess.
Okay, and John, what do you think of the mantra of try harder?
I've said it before. I don't think it's try harder. It's keep trying. I don't want you to be banging your head against the wall. I don't want you to be like just throwing your computer out the window. Look, I am understanding it's all about learning. It's all about education. So if you need to reach out for help, there's nothing wrong with that. If you need to go take a sneak peek at a little solutions document, only read enough that you need so you can get back on track. But keep trying. Don't stop. Keep working.
Fair enough.
Just to jump in on that one as well, I would 100% agree. You've got mentalities where you say, just bang your head against it until you're done. That works for some people. Personally, I would suggest you certainly read all the write-ups for a box after you do it, because people have different ways of doing things. People have different methodologies, and it's really good seeing how they've been working on it. But also, if you're stuck and you've taken a step back and you're sitting there, you're thinking, I have no idea how to do this, that box is probably using something you've not seen before. If you've exhausted all your ideas, you literally sit there, write down a sheet of ideas, and if you've exhausted all of them, then you're probably at the stage where you're seeing something completely new, in which case it's not fair to you know, if you don't have a clue, don't have anything, any ideas of what you could possibly be looking at here, look at the write-up, just for that little section, and then you'll learn something. You'll learn what you're looking at, and you can go away and Google. You can go away and look at what you're doing next.
Yep, totally agreed.
I mean, James, in the hidden chat that we have, has popped down, I'm genuinely interested in how you measure your progress and success as a room creator. Oh, we put it in the doc. Okay, James.
Fawaz has responded by the amount of death threats, and honestly, he's right. I genuinely see myself as having made it now that I've had a couple of death threats from this one.
Fantastic. Okay, so do you guys? Let's get into something a little bit more fun. Do you guys have a type of music that you like to listen to when creating boxes? This is going to be casual questions while we're sorting the giveaway out.
Yeah, I'm just sitting here in the background pulling names out of a hat just now. So be aware it's going.
It's happening.
Yeah, so I just pinged you. Yeah, but just while you were speaking to John there.
If anyone is interested in my music tastes, I kind of go back and forth between like rock and electronic dance music and a little bit of synthwave. So when I'm feeling angsty, when I'm angry at the world, I'll listen to some Starset. Red is another really great one. Skillet, kind of that scene. When I'm feeling techy, when I'm feeling like I want to hack, I listen to a lot of EDM. So Faint or drum and bass stuff between Pendulum. Fox Stevenson is one of my absolutely favorite artists. Fox Stevenson, and I will sing and praise that all the time. I love seeing him in concert. Pendulum is fantastic. I see the love in there. NCS, yep, great shout out for them. And synthwave stuff. I love The Midnight and Gunship and FM84. So if you're into that scene, dude, listen to The Midnight's new horror show EP. It is phenomenal.
Fantastic. The thing, I'm actually trying to remember the name of a artist. I know him from Hack 5, back from my Hack 5 days, which was about 10 years ago. Zero something? Zero Wave, possibly, like that? But it does all these kind of cool techie EDM stuff. It's really, really good. But Pendulum, I've seen them live. Do it. Pendulum are awesome live. So, again,
do you need a little bit more air coverage? I can take one of the fun questions that someone asked.
Well, I mean, we're making them up. So one thing I always ask kind of guests that come on here is, what's your other than Blue, what is your favorite THM room other than Blue?
Oh gosh.
So Fawaz was saying his was Unbaked Pie, which do you know what? After he said that, a whole bunch of people went and did the room. So
that'd be meaning the Osiris there.
Truthfully, I haven't broken into a lot of the like cool, flashy TriHack Me ones personally, because I've just been bouncing around, running to different things. So I wish I could give a great answer, but I don't think I'd be able to have a good one, honestly.
So Blue then, obviously.
Vulnversity for those folks.
Yeah, so according to Dark, Blue's not broken. So
Blue's never been broken. Never, yeah. Ever.
Blue's always broken.
It is immortal and perfect.
Yeah, Dark, re all you like, Blue's broken.
Someone asked a really fun question that I kind of picked up on, and I would like to. They had asked me, "Hey, John, when did you first hear about TriHackMe, and what's one thing that you like about TriHackMe?" I can take about the first. When did you first hear about TriHackMe? I thought back in 2018, and I might be wrong. I might be wrong in the timeline because I'm not positive how long y'all were around. But I think 2018 was like the start, was when things got really moving. I thought I had seen TriHackMe come to life with maybe the first advent of cyber. And I didn't exactly know what I was looking at the time. Like I don't mean to be like saying anything bad or wrong here. I didn't know what TriHackMe really was, and the elf pictures and kind of the fun, cheeky weirdness of advent of cyber just seemed like a toy and a gimmick for the very, very first one. And it was just fell off to the side of my mind. And I never ended up knowing more of it. At one point, it might've been back in 2019. At that point, Skitty had like reached out and gave me a call, and he was like, "Hey John, we have this thing. We got TriHackMe. Would you be cool with making some videos about it?" And I'm like, "Yeah, man, absolutely. I've wanted to for a long time, 'cause I'd seen it in the ether, but I haven't done anything with it." I wish I had started releasing videos on TriHackMe before Skitty had reached out, but he beat me to it. And I don't know, that got me into it. And I think the TriHackMe video, the very first one that I did for basic pen testing, has got me like that video has a million views. It's the only thing I've ever produced that is over a million views on YouTube. So I hope it's been a mutually beneficial relationship. Like, hey, I love to see you guys succeed, and I love to see you guys grow, and I super appreciate all of all the support from what I put out and do.
We're there as well. That's your that basic pen testing video. Yeah, it was really, really good for us as well, and it's always nice seeing the people come in from here from stuff that you've put out. So yeah, it's mutually beneficial. You know what? This is great.
Also, the other guys can't see this, but while Muri was talking, he was actually typing a different thing in one of the chats. I don't know how he does it.
With difficulty. Yeah, no, I've just been, while Esky's been asking John questions, for full disclosure, I've been sitting here picking the winners out of the hat. So
I tried to give you some air coverage there.
So John, just for my own kind of personal something, because I wanted to do this a little while ago, I was trying to do moto vlogging, but it didn't quite work. What first encouraged you to turn the camera on?
Ooh. That's a horrific question. I've told the origin story before, but you can look back and see like old videos of mine back from like 2011. There's a different channel. There's an old one, even when I was younger than that, videos like 2008 and 2009. And they're like trying to showcase, writing things in Yo-Yo Games Game Maker or Adventure Maker. And that was like getting me... It was the fledgling beginnings of learning a little bit more programming and computer science and stuff. But you can find them. Like, they're way, literally more than a decade ago. I just wanted to, showcase stuff. And when I learned Python through YouTube, I thought like, hey, maybe I could do the same thing. If the best way to learn is to try and teach, then I'll share what I'm learning. And now there are decade-old Python tutorials that are awful.
we have a few more Year of the Jellyfish roots.
Nice.
Wow. Just while that's happening. Now granted one of them's Oday, and I know for a fact that Oday knows the bloody method.
I guess the hints worked.
He was just working off all the hints we were dropping.
He's got the no, he doesn't have the write-up, but I have explained to him exactly what the path is, so shame on you, Oday. But shout out to Black Arrow, who has just managed to root it as well. The only two new ones are Oday and Black Arrow.
Do you reckon Oday got an unintended?
No, I do not. I'd be very surprised if seen it for unintended.
If I could, I would like to kind of get a pulse check from everyone listening in. Has this been fun? Has this been like, do you like this sort of thing? I don't know. And I don't have the purview into what TriHackMe's got going on and all these great plans, but I really hope that this was enjoyable for this sort of contest raffle thing. Look, I hope it kind of brought the community together. And I love to see it. The chat's having a great time. I really appreciate all this, and I hope for you, Murray and Skitty and Dark and everyone TriHackMe staff, I hope this has been as fulfilling and as rewarding as we wanted it to be. I hope we got there for you.
Been great, yeah, and thank you very much for coming in here.
Yeah,
It's been
an interesting format. It's been a very interesting format, like the conversation rather than a Q&A. Well, it's a Q&A, but a conversation rather than an AMA, you know? I quite like it. It was fun. And Yuri is about to do the thing that everybody wants us to do.
Yeah, I think the thing everyone wants me to do is the hints, actually. But you know what? Go away. Right, okay. I have winners here. I have...
Ooh.
Winners from the competition here.
Do the subs first.
Okay, we'll do the subs first. We have two sub vouchers. James has kindly donated sub vouchers. We have two of these. The first winner of a TriHackMe subscription voucher. I'm going to say to all of you, I have all the codes sitting here. DM me. I will not be responding until after we're out here. But DM me if I ping you in here and come get your sub code. Subcode and then throwback code. Either way, the first sub voucher winner is you've changed your original name. I know you otherwise, but TriHackMe's official nerd. I have pinged you in the chat. Yeah,
so that's congratulations.
The first subcode.
Smash boy.
Yeah. So give me a ping, and we'll sort you out with the voucher. The second voucher. Is now I don't know how to say that, but Sha rooted.
Hey, a level 3, fantastic.
Yes. Yeah, no, just for the record, these have been completely picked out of a hat. They're completely random.
No, it's good because
John, you got muted for the emoji. Oh, that's good.
Sorry, we're memeing, that's all.
There we go.
Sorry, we're memeing.
Okay.
Hey, yeah. Sharuted. Yes, that's you right there. So yeah. we expect you to be smashing through the ranks over the next month. Absolutely yeah. smash through them.
We've got, so that's two sub vouchers given out. So you can thank James very much for those. I've got the codes here. Just give me a DM after this and I will pass those over to you. Yeah, thank James. That's James. That's entirely on James. Mm-hmm. All right. Anyway, so we have two subcodes given out. Now, this is the interesting one. Now, I've tried to pick someone who I don't think has done throwback. I say tried to pick. I mean, we got this one first time. I went and did the wheel and just checked on profiles to see if you've already done throwback, just because there's not a whole lot of point in doing it twice.
Stop keeping us in suspense, Murray.
I am keeping you in suspense deliberately. Either way, the throwback voucher is going to Craig, zero sum.
Hey. So again, not the bot.
No, not the bot. So yeah, give me a ping, give me a DM, and I'll sort that out for you. And again, if you already have got it, well, I've picked your name now. So how do I choose? I've literally just chosen. I'll send you the site if you want. I've literally just chosen by sticking all the names into a spinny wheel.
Oh, Wheel of Names. Yeah,
Wheel of Names. In fact, I think it literally is Wheel of Names. There you go. It is literally wheelofnames.com. I've just stuck all the names in there, and I've done it completely randomly. So yeah, if you want to give me a shout, Craig, after this, and we'll sort you out with throwback voucher. Or if you've already done it before, well, you know what? I've picked your name now, so you can do what you like with it. Either way, that one comes directly from TryHackMe. It's not been donated by any particular member of the community.
Thank you, Dark. Yes,
yeah. Give me a PM. Yeah, thanks, Dark. And give me a PM. Anyone who's just been given something away.
Okay. So yeah, thank you everybody as well for listening in. It's been a bloody good event. Really enjoyed it. I've enjoyed grilling these two as well, asking the awkward questions. Keep an eye in the Discord. Obviously, we've got the OSCP giveaway happening at the end of this. I'll be honest with you, I'm not 100% how we're actually going to be doing it, but we will sort that out next week.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's going to be an absolute rip roaring. As I say, there'll be a random event with an EJPT talk with me and Animo, and I'll give John Hammond just a couple of minutes to do a bit of self-promotion. Go on, what are you doing next, John?
Oh, hey, well, thanks so much. I am going to be doing a video walkthrough of the Year of the Jellyfish room. I would love to produce that and get that out for us on Friday, if that's cool, as the competition ends. Truthfully, and a lot of people were dunking on me, I have not tried to go through it just yet. So I know that I'm in for a world of hurt, but I'll do my best. I'll showcase all the rabbit holes that I fall down. And I'm excited. I hope folks are having fun with this. And I'm very excited to put out a video for that as well.
I'm just going to say it's been great speaking to you, John. And maybe we can do this again
this
sometime.
This was a ton of fun. Thank you for being willing. Yeah. And I were chatting and he was like, John, do you want to do an AMA? Do you want to just, everyone can ask you questions, John. And I'm like, no, that's stupid. We dunk you for being willing to come on and chat.
Oh, my pleasure.